Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Steve Tatum from El Paso, Texas, and I represent the petitioner in this case that has been sued for violating United States Letters patent entitled Dairy Establishment. The patent was filed on November the 5th of 1963 and was finally issued on November the 14th of 1965. It has been admitted in this case and so found by the Fifth Circuit that every element in this patent, consisting of 13 elements, is old in the art. In a part of the Fifth Circuit opinion which has validated this patent on the basis that it exhibits novelty and is not obvious, the court has specifically said that while this honorable court rejected its rationale in Graham when it validated a patent on the basis that an old result in a cheaper and otherwise more advantageous way, although the court rejected that proposition, the Fifth Circuit in this case confessed that it was ignorant as to what test, if any, this court substituted for what had struck out. It is submitted that this case is controlled and governed by the decisions in this case rendered by this court in Anderson, BlackRock, Graham versus John Deere, A&P, and Lincoln Engineering. It is our position that the Court of Appeals erred in setting aside the trial court findings on three different occasions to the effect that this combination patent did not show off novelty, non-obviousness, and that under Rule 52, they are supported by credible evidence, were not clearly erroneous, and they were reached by proper application of the law to the facts.
Is it pretty well settled in the federal courts generally that findings of novelty, vel non, utility, vel non, obviousness, vel non, of a district court are subject to the standards of Rule 52, i.e. that there's findings of fact, not of law?
Mr. Justice, it is my understanding, and I confess that I am not a patent attorney. This, by chance, is the first patent case that I have ever had the pleasure to be dealing with. But as I understand the law and this court's enactment in the Graham case, while the three inquiries that are asked under Section 103 are considered factual inquiries, the final determination as to whether or not a patent is or is not valid is a question of law to which this court, and only this court, is the final arbiter. I am also of the opinion that the question of novelty would be in that same category.
Well, Mr. Tatum, I don't know if Justice Stewart feels completely satisfied with your answer to his question, but I, at any rate, am left with some uncertainties. You say it is initially a question of fact, but in the last analysis, it's a question of law. Does that mean only when it's so clear that reasonable people couldn't disagree, or only when it falls outside the clearly erroneous standard, is it a question of law? Or is this basically a question of law initially rather than a question of fact?
Well, I believe that the validity of a patent is a question of law. In making that determination, whether it is the trial court or the Court of Appeals or this court, of necessity in reaching the question of whether or not it is non-obvious, there are certain factual inquiries that lay the predicate as to whether or not the final decision, obvious, non-obviousness, is one of law. I think that it is relevant in understanding what is involved in this particular patent, and the only means that we're talking about in this particular patent that is allegedly new and outside the prior art is the means to house or hold water at the upper end of a dairy barn, in a pool, or on the floor, so that it can be released suddenly to flow downhill, and as it flows downhill, the natural propensity of water removes manure that is on deposit on the concrete floor. I think it is important for this court to understand, first, what are the basic features of what I refer to as a standard grade A dairy barn floor plan. And the reason for that is they are fairly standard. They're regulated in order to be able to sell and produce grade A milk. You have to have certain sanitary conditions in order to be entitled to that type of production. First, basic to a modern dairy is the fact that the floor is concrete. It is paved. It generally slopes downhill towards a drain. The reason for that is to allow or to assist water that is on the floor to be removed. The floor itself is contoured, or it is shaped, to try to avoid puddles. There may or may not be grooves in the concrete. The grooves would allow or assist water to remove manure that may be deposited on the floor. Mr. Kolish has reproduced in a supplemental appendix, beginning on page 11, his patent of the supplemental appendix, which is this one. Now, the patent is also in evidence and is a part of the single volume appendix, although I confess it is a little harder to read because it's smaller. Yes, I would just refer you to the larger one because it's easier to read, page 11.
There's also a movie, I understand, from reading the briefs, now cut down to a 2.5-minute movie that the respondents at least tell us we ought to look at before we try to...
Well, in all candor, Mr. Justice, the 2.5-minute movie was not in evidence. There's a larger one. There is a larger movie. I think it was about 15 or 20 minutes.
Maybe I misunderstood the
reading. I think there may be one that is filed. There may be one that is filed, but...
There is one that's filed. Do you object to the fact that some of us have looked at it?
Well...
we thought it was in the record.
I thought it was. There was a movie in the record.
There was a movie in the record, Your Honor, but that was the one that was introduced in the trial court before Judge Gwynn in El Paso, and it's about 15 or 20 minutes. Now, as I understand, the one that has been asked to be shown in argument is an edited movie, not from the same one, and we would object to that being shown because it is an attempt to supplement the record, or it is not the same movie that was in it. I don't know that it's from the same movie.
It goes to the record what an appendix goes to the record. It's an abbreviation.
Well,
you don't know whether it's an abbreviation of the movie in the record, is that it?
That is true.
Well, is it your position that a justice of the court who had seen that 2 or 3 minute movie ought to disqualify himself?
Your Honor,
that's out of this case on that
No, I don't want to disqualify any judge. I can't make a decision on that because I haven't seen the movie that you're thinking about. I don't want you to disqualify.
I got it. What you said, you feel I ought not look at it.
If it's not the same movie in evidence, that's right. But I wouldn't say that the movie is going to disqualify a judge that has looked at it.
I haven't seen it.
Yes.
I didn't even know it was being shown. I didn't even know it was here.
If there's a movie that the court wants to see, the one that was in evidence is the 15 or 20 minute one. I think it is. So far as I understand that it is, I was asked very specifically to have all of the exhibits from the Fifth Circuit up here, and I was under the impression that that one was here.
If I look at any, I should look at that and not at the 2.5-minute abbreviated version. That's your position?
That would be my position.
All right.
Counsel, the respondent's brief says the 2.5-minute film strip was shown to the Fifth Circuit at the argument on the merits, so you must have seen it then.
No, sir, I was not at the Fifth Circuit.
Oh, I see.
It was my understanding, as long as the matter has been raised, that the movie that was offered to the Fifth Circuit was from the same movie. We are not sure now. It may be, but I'm saying that there has been some question raised about it, and I am not in a position to say because I did not see the movie.
I hope you and your fellow counsel will get this straightened out, because I frankly had been planning to look at the movie, because I can often understand things better that way by contrast to looking at drawings and blueprints. Promptly after the argument, you and counsel would get together, either saying this is a proper part of this case or isn't. I'd be interested in knowing, because I'd been planning to look at the movie.
All right, sir.
Which it was that the Fifth Circuit saw, that is, the 2.5-minute abridged version or the full version? Because we should certainly have available to us whatever the Fifth Circuit saw if we want to look at it.
All right, sir. I believe that. I may be wrong, but I thought the Fifth Circuit had two movies there. I may be wrong, but I thought all the exhibits were also before the Fifth Circuit. All right, on top of the floor are cow stalls, feeding area, milking area, and holding area. And the cow, of necessity, needs to walk from various areas to the other on this concrete floor. Also, in a standard dairy barn, is some type of trough or tank which holds the water. Now, I submit to the court that in the mid-1960s, when the application for this particular patent was submitted, and if we look at the definition of how Webster defines flush to mean a sudden release or washout, sudden rapid flow of water to flood, it would be most difficult to come up with a new idea that added to the sum of useful knowledge with a, quote, flush system. Because by definition, we're dealing with water that must be suddenly released as a rapid rate of flow to wash out, to flow, or to flood in order to have a flush system, by definition. The respondent's expert, Mr. Huber, has given us a detailed explanation of how this flush concept works. It's in the appendix beginning at page 114 through 116. But his basic concept is that when water begins to flow, it creates energy, which serves as a cleaning action, and that the natural propensity of water as it flows downhill is to have the bottom of the water onto the floor. The top surface of the water goes faster, and therefore, as the water flows downhill, it has a natural cleaning action. The basic propensity of water is generally related to the amount of water released or to the slope of the grade of the floor onto which it is released. Now, when we get to this point in the record, and it was in the record before, it is in our briefs, we have cited this reference before, I think it is relevant to discuss this legend of Hercules. What did he do? It is recorded, it is only a legend, but it is recorded in Greek mythology, and that as Hercules, as his fifth labor, saw the conditions of the stables, he, at a single glance, diverted the stream Alphaeus to clean the stables of the filthy manure on the floor.
Is that the basis for your claim of non-obviousness?
No, sir, it is not. It certainly does. I would cite the court.
How long did it take them to reduce that concept to practice?
Well, I would say until the time of the bucket. Because it is submitted, and again, I have to be in all candor with the court, it seems that this tank is simply the release of, we're talking about a tank that has 2,000 gallons of water. And releasing 2,000 gallons of water of itself is going to bring about some action. And we maintain that that is not a novel idea, it does not add to the sum of useful knowledge. But I do direct the court's attention to some prior art that is recorded and that is set out in some detail beginning on page 5 of our reply brief. The first of the patents is the McCormick patent, which, again, it is much more legible if it is looked in the blue appendix. It's much larger, beginning on page 55. McCormick patent, by chance, is named Dairy Plant. The patent we're talking about is Dairy Establishment. The patent of McCormick was issued on June the 1st of 1937, but the McCormick patent deals with the idea of trying to save labor, both as to the milking and removal of manure operation, and for disposing of the manure or slurry as a natural fertilizer after the operation is complete. McCormick teaches that, and they also use the word flush specifically in these specifications, that the milking benches and gutters are washed, the water flows from the shields, flushes simultaneously by means of a common valve. McCormick teaches that what happens is that the operator, who is located near the rear of the cows, steps on a foot pedal in the floor that releases the water against the shields, which flows downhill. I also cite the court's attention to the patent of Bogert, which begins on page 5 through 7 of the reply brief. Bogert specifically deals with an apparatus for cleaning the surfaces of barns. Its application for patent was issued on March the 4th of 1941. Now, in Bogert refers to, quote, a fluid cleaning medium, which, when you read the specifications, is water. Bogert refers to a, quote, fluid cleaning medium supply tank, close quote, which is attached on the floor at the upper end of this particular barn, which when a, quote, cap valve, close quote, and I direct the court's attention to the visualization of this, is very similar to the top of a commode seat. It's on page 75. That's his basic layout. But be that as it may, this, for you will, commode seat is picked up by a chain, which causes the water to be stored in this, quote, fluid cleaning medium supply tank, close quote, to go downhill by gravity and then enter the various gutters. Now, I want to point out specifically that in Bogert, which is the March 4, 41 patent, the cows were arranged so that the manure of necessity fell into a gutter. It did not flow onto the floor. So therefore, the fluid from the fluid cleaning medium supply tank only flushed the gutter. The patent in question, the cows are, the manure is not necessarily deposited in such a manner. In other words, it is not accumulated solely in a gutter, so his tank is water. I want to refer the court specifically to the language of the patent office on page 13 through 15 of my brief. In examining these prior art publications, the patent office said this: since the patent to McCormick discloses that it's old in the art to flush cattle stalls and to collect the waste for fertilizer, it is held to be an obvious expedient under 35-103 to provide the Kutzner Dairy Establishment with such a flushing means and waste collection tank. On page
Mr. Tatum, I'm trying to get something clear from this opinion. There's some suggestions in the Fifth Circuit opinion that indicate that the Fifth Circuit, in effect, determined that you had not exercised due diligence and that this was not really newly discovered evidence. That you're at least in part penalized for that. So what do you have to say about that?
Mr. Chief Justice, that is what the Fifth Circuit said. The prior art that I am talking about is not what the Fifth Circuit was talking about.
Procedure fundamentally like yours?
It has been conceded by the respondent that it was identical to their patent, but that I have not talked about Mission Dairy yet. Maybe it is necessary at this point in time, if I may.
Whatever you want, but just be sure that you give us some information about that aspect.
All right.
Of the case.
What I simply wanted to do, and it is my position that the record before that was made before Judge Gwynn that went up to the Fifth Circuit with respect to the McCormick and Bogart patents, as well as the other evidence, was sufficient for this court to apply the four Supreme Court cases I have brought to the court's attention. Let me bring up what happened procedurally. In January of 1973, my client, who then was living in Florida, by chance met Mr. Herbert Meyer, who happened to be in Florida. At that particular time, in January of 73, we had not received the decision, the second decision from the Fifth Circuit. In February of 73, the Fifth Circuit reversed for the second time this patent application. This patent case. We filed at that time when we had received notice that the second case had been reversed, a motion for rehearing addressed to the Fifth Circuit, raising the question that Mr. Secreta had only 3 weeks before personally met the name of the man who owned the Mission Dairy in Gonzales, California. It was at that time that the Fifth Circuit directed us, since we were the appellee, to bring this motion to the attention of the trial court, because they were the only medium through which we could act to get a record. So we did that. We filed a motion pursuant to the direction of the Fifth Circuit with the trial court in El Paso. There was a different trial court that was sent from San Antonio, Texas to El Paso to receive the testimony with respect to Mr. Herbert Meyer, Mr. Bud Secreta, Mr. Chester Whitmore, and Mr. Frank Sousa. Those exhibits, together with the pictures from Herb Meyer's dairy, are also before the court as exhibits A through K. Following that hearing, Judge Wood, up until that time, had had nothing to do with this case, also entered findings of fact and conclusions of law. He found that the patent lacked novelty, it did not meet the test of obviousness, it was anticipated by this prior art, and that a petitioner had exercised due diligence in discovering the name of the witnesses, because they arose simply out of a by-chance meeting somewhere in the state of Florida in January of 73.
Circuit opinion, if I'm reading the right opinion, on page 3A of the appendix, Secreta testified that that occasion you speak of was the first time he had full knowledge of these facts. However, this is the important part, the evidence clearly establishes that prior to the original trial, Secreta was aware that Mission Dairy was using a flushing system that was a possible source of prior art.
Well,
and that Secreta had sent one of his men over to look at it before the trial, and he reported he wasn't able to see it.
Well, Mr. Chief Justice, Judge Wood's findings on that very point.
Before or after this opinion?
Before. He was the trial court that accumulated that record and attended that hearing. Appear in the appendix first at page 174. Through 175. Second, they appear at the appendix at page 268. But he is clear, and he gave credence to our testimony that my light is on. Do you want me to? All right. He gave credence to our testimony that until this by-chance meeting, we never identified anything with respect to Mission Dairy.
Fields uses the term clearly establishes, and they're referring to something that's contrary to what the district court found, which would at least suggest to me that they're making a determination of clearly erroneous.
Well, but Mr. Chief Justice, the name of Meyer is the link to Mission Dairy, because until you find Mr. Meyer, you're not able to ascertain what it was that was in existence at Mission Dairy, because Mr. Meyer held the key to that. The testimony is in the record is essentially to this effect. Between the date that the summary judgment was granted and the date of the merits, my client was living in the state of Florida. The Mission Dairy is in the state of California. The trial was pending in El Paso, Texas. Through rumors, source unknown. The record is that Mr. Secreta, it was through a rumor suggested, it was suggested to him that he go to Mission Dairy and check out what it was that was there. Since he was living in the state of Florida, he asked a man who sold milking equipment, a man identified as a Mr. Wisdom, who was living in the state of Oregon, that the next time he was down in the area to go by the dairy and try to find out what was there. The testimony is that when he went to the Mission Dairy, he received a rebuff by the manager, Mr. Dick Ripley. He got to the premises, but he was not able to get in and supposedly find out about this flushing gate that they had. He called our client about the rebuff, and we did not know anything more about it than what we'd been informed about by Mr. Wisdom. The name of Herbert Meyer is an assumption that the respondent would have us believe was linked at the same time we went to Mission Dairy. There's absolutely no evidence in the appendix as to where Herbert Meyer was when Mr. Wisdom was in California, or that we knew Mr. Meyer's name. And the trial court chose to believe us on those facts. And that's why that findings to that effect is so clear with respect to that.
Mr. Tatum, even assuming that the trial court was right in finding that this was newly discovered evidence, it wasn't prior art, was it? Because it wasn't the mission. Doesn't the record show the Mission Dairy came into being after the patentee's device was reduced to practice?
A
year before the application.
Mr. Justice Stevens, the evidence with respect to Herbert Meyer is that in January of 62, he had plans on file with the California Soil Conservation Service with respect to his idea.
Isn't it undisputed that the mission idea was reduced to practice in October?
As far as milking operations, it is our position that the Mission Dairy, though, is clearly evidence of ordinary skill in the art, and that was part of the basis what we were using it. But
you don't contend it was prior art, then?
We do, because I don't think... The fact that the idea was known and made public a year prior to the application of this patent, and that is when you go down to the California soil conservation people or the Department of the Agriculture and file your plans to get approval as to what you're going to build or do, that you have reduced in essence or have publicized.
The filing of the plan for this big barn was a reduction to practice? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying he's publicizing his idea. Obviously, there's a time lapse between actually he filed the plan and when he actually got the equipment. You see, the problem was not getting the dairy started. I mean, some of this was getting the milking equipment there. That is part of the problem.
I understand the practical problems. I'm just not sure I understand your legal theory. Your legal theory is that the filing of the plan for something that had not yet been reduced to practice was prior art.
Mr. Chief Justice, on page 14 through 16 of our reply brief, we have addressed that very point with several cases, the relevancy of Mission Dairy as prior art or evidence of ordinary skill in the art.
Well, I understood you to be arguing that it was not prior art, but it nevertheless was evidence that this was not a very inventive concept.
Well,
because somebody else simultaneously developed it, which is a different argument, isn't it?
We're saying that it was effectively publicized at the time he goes to California and files those plans. But that's just Herbert Meyer. Chester Whitmore's plan was written in the Hordes Dairyman as early as 53. Frank Sousa was building dairy barns as early as 46. And Emil Rovey, who is...
This is all unrelated. What I'm suggesting is this is all unrelated to the question of whether it's newly discovered evidence. That's in the record without this additional stuff.
That is really not correct, because Herbert Meyer was the key to us of locating these other three individuals.
You don't feel it's critical to your case
win
on the newly discovered evidence point?
No, sir, we do. It is my position.
You say you're entitled to win.
On the record at the Fifth Circuit.
On the record as first made.
That's true.
And that those issues are properly here.
That's true.
Well, I would have thought that at least possible that the preliminary question is whether or not the Court of Appeals was correct in its ruling on your 60B2 motion. And if we disagree with the Court of Appeals, then arguably the correct disposition on our part would be to remand it to the Court of Appeals with direction to consider that so-called newly discovered evidence. Isn't that right?
Well...
Which it never has done.
The first question seems to me to be the validity of the patent.
Well, I would think the threshold question is whether or not the Court of Appeals should reconsider this case on all of the evidence that you've now tried to introduce instead of on only part of it, because they held that your 60B2 motion was not well taken.
Well, Mr. Justice, it is my position that the record is sufficient as it was at the Fifth Circuit before we went back to the third hearing before Judge Wood. I do think that this court, if it feels that there is any doubt as to the validity of this case, it should consider this case. It should consider the evidence that was offered before Judge Wood. And the
first instance, the Court of Appeals has never considered it.
Because they have found, or they did not consider...
They found your motion was not well taken, so the Court of Appeals has never considered it in reaching its decision on the validity of this patent. And if we hold that your motion was well taken, then the Court of Appeals should consider it. And in the first instance, it's as the district court did. The Court of Appeals then should review it on the full record and on what the district court considered, which it has up to now refused to do.
That is true. Thank you, sir.
Well over. Mr. Polish.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Pierre Kolish, and I represent the patentees. And very simply, my client's invention is for solving the problem of non-toilet-trained cows. The prior art, which my brother Tatum has talked about, and particularly the McCornack and the Bogart patents...
Also, having brought that analogy, and I wonder if you think it would be appropriate for us to take judicial notice of the common variety of toilet that's available to everybody, in considering the obviousness of this device.
Yes, I certainly do, Mr. Justice Stevens. And as you know, there is a completely different principle under which the ordinary toilet works. Well, the ordinary toilet, you have a bowl, and then you have a pipe that comes down and bends around. And that pipe comes up to approximately the level of the water in the toilet. And that pipe always remains full of water, acts as a blockage or a trap for any sewer. And when you add more water, simply put more water in, whether by bucket or otherwise, then there is sufficient pressure, and it just pushes down, and it empties out the pipe that comes up.
Hydraulic pressure, do they not?
Well, I think that any cleaning, whether it's by hose or whether it's by bucket or in any way, everyone has been trying to get rid of cow manure in barns for about thousands of years. I can't tell you how long. And we know, I think this is a good place to start. We're considering a patent here, which is made up, admittedly, of a combination of mechanical elements. And whenever we deal with a patent of that type, there are a number of semantic and ideological pitfalls, which the courts, I believe, have had trouble wrestling with. I would suggest to you that one way of approaching this patent, and perhaps avoiding some of these pitfalls, is to consider first what these two inventors did, and then how they did it. Now, the record establishes that the best way of cleaning dairy barn floors up until the time of this invention was by the use of power. Now, power, I mean the use of a power-driven blade, a front-end loader, which would get all the manure together in a pile, and then the manure would be removed to some place, and ultimately the manure had to be taken and placed on the field surrounding. Now, in order to do a proper cleanup job, that type of a scraping operation had to be followed by a hosing operation. Now, the necessity for the hosing operation was, and we're talking about commercial dairies, we're talking about dairies where there are hundreds of cows involved, is that when you scrape a floor, which has been covered with manure, you leave a thin, slippery film. And this is exceedingly dangerous to the cows, as well as to anybody who's walking on it. So you have to follow up the scraping operation with a hosing operation. Now, once you've done that, you then have to get rid of it. And still, you haven't solved the problem. Now, you could, of course, start by hosing, and that sometimes is done, but that won't work on a 300-foot alleyway, because once you start hosing, I think as any of you know, you are starting to splash things all over the place. And besides that, all that you do by a hosing operation is to force it into piles. And in the end, even your hose is not going to dislodge these piles. So what did these two inventors do? They came along and they solved a problem, and the record shows that to clean up a comparable alleyway, 300 or 400 feet long, would take 4 or 5 hours. Literally, in 1 minute, according to the patented invention, just as long as it takes to wave my hand, you've cleaned it. Now, what you've done is you have substituted for hours of dirty, disagreeable, miserable labor, a shining, clean floor that takes no time, no effort, no money, and satisfies all of the sanitary requirements, plus being ecologically extremely sound, because what you've done, according to the system, is you've put the manure in a form so that it can be put through a sprinkler system and put on the surrounding fields. Now, what I have described is precisely what Gribble and Bennett invented. This is what they contributed to the dairy industry. Now, let me pick up where my brother Tatum did with respect to these two prior art patents. And these were, Mr. Chief Justice, in the record before the district court. It is undisputed that they are properly before this court. I think they exemplify the best of the prior art. They show that the technology was to install pipes all over a dairy. Now, the McCornack patent is extremely detailed, complicated piece of equipment, but basically what he showed was that there are partitions between the cows during their milking area. They refer here to cow shields.
Is there a diagram in the record that you're...
Yes, I think if you were to look at the supplemental record on page 62, figure 14, yes, I'm sorry, supplemental appendix, page 62, figure 14 at the bottom, you will see a cow standing, and to the left you'll see a number 215. That is a standpipe that bends over the shield number 40, which is around the flanks of the cow, and as Mr. McCornack describes, There is offal that goes on that. And how is that washed off? He has water running out of pipe 215. That's one of his washing means. Now, if we will turn to page 66 of the same volume, you will see a plan view. This is figure 25. And there, the number 265 indicates a series of pipes which go into gutters, and those gutters are shown where the arrows are. They're a group of arrows, and those are gutters, and there is water running in those gutters from a series of pipes.
Whereabouts on that diagram on page 66 is 265? I don't seem to see it.
265 appears in the lower left-hand corner just above 260. Those are pipes. And again, we do not dispute that if the cows are careful enough to drop their offal in the gutter, it will be removed, I think. But
Mr. Kolisch, does the McCormick, I guess the name of this patent is, does this contemplate the use of the flushing technique without prior cleaning by hand, shoveling, and the like?
No. It talks in the patent that there may be use that may be necessary to use hand cleaning also, because this does not cover all the barn floor's area. It is simply...
Let me change the question slightly. To the extent that this device is intended to flush portions of the barn, does the device contemplate that those portions would previously be cleaned manually?
No. I think that under the McCormick patent, those portions where the water is discharged in the gutters and on the shield, that supposedly they would be cleaned. However, it is not the same concept as the invention.
What's the difference in concept?
Yes. The difference in the concept is the difference between taking a hose. And
this does not describe use of hoses. Oh, is it?
Oh, yes, it's water under pressure. It's a series of pipes. Whether it all comes from water under pressure. They're just pipes that are...
Pipes as distinguished from hoses.
Well, I...
They are different, are they not? They're permanent installations through which the water flows.
Yes, they are permanent. To that extent, a hose may be movable. But it's
not hoses.
No, they are permanently fixed pipes which are... Discharge.
A difference in concept, a different method of getting the water propelled through the gutters?
Well, it's a difference in the way in which the water acts once it is released. Whether it's a pipe or a hose, the water comes out in the form of the orifice from which it is being discharged, and it is point impingement. And it must be, whether it comes from a pipe.
The difference in concept is one huge flow rather than several separate flows simultaneous.
The invention eliminates all hoses, pipes, and gutters. They simply aren't any in the invention. No such thing as hoses, pipes, and gutters, all of which are in the prior art and are necessary in the prior art. Same thing in the...
The difference between cleaning everything at once and cleaning only a portion of the barn.
Well, and
I'm trying
also...
To, trying to articulate
yes,
what the difference is.
I appreciate that, Mr. Justice Stevens. It is more than that. It is the way in which it's done. It's the difference between releasing a tidal wave or a flood and having water come out of a pipe or a hose. Now, it's both... In both cases, there's water. Yes, but many pipes simultaneously, you simply have, perhaps, this type of effect, a spray effect, in effect. But it is not hydraulically, it does not operate in the same way at all, because the pipe discharge water simply cannot do the job which the flood release water. I think a good example is shown in the Bogert patent, which was another one. I think if you look at page 75, you see a top plan view. Page 75, you see cow stalls to the left and to the right, and these are indicated at 5 and 6. Then behind each of the cows, there is a gutter, number 12 and number 13. In between those gutters, there's a cow walkway. The lines which you see, dotted lines in there, are embedded underground pipes which run under the cow walkway and then discharge at a plurality of places into the gutters, 12 and 13. The water from water for those pipes comes from a large tank, and that's shown on page 77 at figure 7. And, yes, I'm talking about Bogart now, because it's still the same principle as McCornack, and I think these are illustrative of the prior art. Figure 7 on page 77 of the supplemental record, supplemental appendix, shows the large tank, and there are pipe connections which come in and are shown at the bottom with numbers 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21. And the water simply runs out from these pipes under pressure and is fed into the gutter at various places. Now this, the problem, for instance, with Bogart and all the others, and that's why I started somewhat facetiously in saying that the invention had to do with cows who were not toilet or gutter trained. Bogart, I will assume, works perfectly well as long as the cows remain positioned over the gutters. But as we all know, cows don't remain that way. And when the cows roam, walk up and down this broad alleyway, which is marked 9, there isn't any way of cleaning them. There isn't any provision. There isn't any suggestion as to how to get rid of that. And that, of course, was the ingenious of this invention. For the first time, a dairyman was enabled to wash all of his floor areas immediately without the use of any labor, without the use of any power. Here was a situation where you could get rid of all of the problems and all of the help that you had in connection with the removal of, when the cows are not in their stalls. It is the cows in these commercial dairies do not go out to the surrounding fields. They are maintained in a confined area where they are milked, and then they go from their milking, they go to a loafing area, and then they return to their stalls. And a cow is a marvelous creature of habit, and it will return to its own stall, and each cow has its own stall.
When you do all this flush, the water.
The cow can be any place.
Now, you want to flush where the cows are standing?
No, yes.
Where is he? He's not there. He's not there where the flush is going.
He may be, Mr. Justice Marshall.
Flushed out with the rest of them?
No, he won't. That's one of the beauties of the invention.
See, on these pictures you hand around here, this area up there is not being flushed.
Yes. Now, what we have in these pictures, that's the before picture. The picture up at the top is the before. Now, we have
what?
That is after. Now, what we have in these pictures is...
The cows between before and after.
The cow may be in its stall, or it could be standing in the alleyway. All it does is wash its feet. As a matter of fact, the cows are quite happy to have their feet washed. It removes the offal, and you look at me quizzically. And I don't blame you. I didn't believe it would work either. As a matter of fact, when this thing was first presented to me, I said, it's incredible. I just don't think it will work. First of all, how...
Heavy water coming down there, at what pressure is it under?
There's no pressure. The water just is permitted to run.
Well, what is this here in there?
Well, what you see, this wave coming out is...
The wave comes from pressure, doesn't it?
Well, there is a head because you have about 2.5 feet of water, and then you drop the gate.
Peacefully stands there.
That's right. And if you will
look... You've got some peaceful cows out there.
If you will look at the movies, I think in the movies you see cows actually standing when this water is running. Now, I had the same incredulous feeling that you did when I was presented with this invention, and it wasn't until I went out to a dairy and saw a 300-foot out. I beg your pardon, sir? I didn't think that was possible.
It's a 2.5-foot drop, the length of this...
The drop is about 1 foot per hundred, 1 or 2 feet per hundred.
Well, does that not create an enormous pressure?
No.
A very fast trout stream will only drop 2 feet in a mile or more or less. That'll be a very fast running water.
The water moves swiftly, as you can see, but it is not such as to knock an animal, a four-footed animal.
But as suggested, the very appearance of that wave in this photograph shows that there is a considerable hydraulic pressure exerted here. And that's part of the function of what you claim is an invention, I take it.
Yes, it is combining that with the other aspects. And as Mr. Justice Marshall said, where are the cows when this is going on? Well, the one thing you don't want to wash is their bedding, is where the cows are loafing. And you will see from this...
They have to get out on the center. Is there something that forces them in the center?
The cows go there normally to be milked. These cows live in this type of a routine. They have a stall where they lie down and chew their cud. When their milking time comes, they will get up naturally, and they know these are creatures of habit. They are milked twice a day, and they will walk and amble around to where the milking is to take place. And then they will go to another area, which is called a loafing area, where they may stay. And then they will come back again to their stalls to be fed, because there is food provided for them.
To prevent them from defecating in the stall.
Because of the position, the stalls, and it's called for in the claims, that the stall is of a size so that only the front portions of the cow can and will be in. The rear portions of the cow are positioned above the alleyway.
Small cow, that doesn't work.
There are two answers to that question, Mr. Justice Blackmun. In the first place, in these commercial dairies, they have the same type of cows. They all have Holsteins or Jerseys or whatever it is. Secondly, the stall, there is a thing that you can put in front of the cows, and you can push it back or forth depending upon the size of the cow so that it can go in farther or that it will back up. And this is adjusted depending upon. I've lit
the record.
Now, these photographs were added by me because of they are simply photographs. I didn't know whether or not the court would look at the movie. I felt that the only possible way that the court could understand what this is all about is by looking at photographs. Now,
these are just for illustrative.
These are illustrative of counsel's argument. They are no different from other photographs in the record. There are plenty of photographs in the record.
Is the 15-minute version here?
Both versions are here.
Where did the 2-minute or 3-minute?
The 2.5-minute version came about as follows. We had a long version, Plaintiff's Exhibit 9, which was shown to the district court. Prior to the argument on the merits in the Fifth Circuit, I prepared a short 2.5-minute movie because I decided that you couldn't give it a 9 or 10 minute.
From what? It
was a brand new movie. The same thing as the other one, except it was a condensation. Yes. Now, what happened with respect to that movie? I petitioned the court to show it, and the court said, submit a copy of this to counsel for the defendant, which I did. I prepared an identical copy of the movie, submitted it prior to the argument in the Fifth Circuit, and there was no objection from counsel to the showing of the movie in the Fifth Circuit. It was shown in the Fifth Circuit, and I think it helped the court materially. I beg your pardon?
How did you file it here?
I filed it prior to argument here. I asked Mr. Tatum Would it be all right if I used this movie in the Supreme Court, assuming that the court would look at it? Mr. Tatum said, it's all right by me, but I will have to talk to Mr. Hulse. He is senior counsel in this case. Mr. Tatum called me back later and said, it's okay. I understand that since then he has changed his mind, but it is the identical movie that he has had ever since 1973.
File it as, with the record, or
no.
Did you file it with, in connection with any petitions? I've never seen anything.
Yes, I submitted a motion to the clerk of the court, and the clerk of the court informed me that this court would not look at a movie during a session of the court, that it was against the court's rules. And he said, you may lodge it with me, and then you may call it to the court's attention, and if the court wishes to look at the movie, it will do so during its deliberation.
Qualify any of us if we looked at the 15-minute version?
Certainly not.
Are these taken from either movie?
No, sir. They are not. They were prepared by...
A secondary outfit. There is a secondary classification of visual portrayals not introduced in evidence.
No. They are simply in aid of counsel's argument. They're, in principle, they are no different from what existed before, and the purpose was, visually, if you had not looked or you would not look at the movie, to try and give you some feel for this. And what we show here is the before, the during, and literally it took about a minute, and this is after. My wife took them, and I stood next to her when she took them.
Mr. Polish, what is your position as to the state of the law? Is an inquiry into whether there something is inventive or something is non-obvious a question of law or a question of fact?
I think, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, it's a mixed question. I think you must start by making certain factual findings. And in the Graham case, this court went into that quite carefully. And I think that the major substantive question before the court is the one of obviousness. I don't think there's any question that this was novel, that it was useful.
Pursuing a little bit more my brother Rehnquist's question is, are findings of novelty, utility, and... non-obviousness, or their opposites, subject to Rule 52A of the Rules of Civil Procedure or not?
I would say they were.
They are.
Yes. Those are fact findings.
Established and accepted in the federal courts?
Yes.
You don't say that's the rule in most courts of appeals, do you?
Well,
for example, the Seventh Circuit, it isn't the rule there. Very clearly, it's not.
Where are you coming from?
I think that the...
Is it quite clear that the issue of obviousness is treated as an issue of law by the courts of appeals generally?
In the end it comes, but there are certain factual bases.
Yes, but that's not what you answered Mr. Justice Stewart. He asked you on the issue of obviousness, does Rule 52A apply?
No, I think that the
Your
ultimate
is
question...
No to that, I take it.
The ultimate question is one of law. Yes?
The underlying historical fact questions, they said clear and that was a 52, Rule 52 question.
Yes.
But the ultimate issue was a law question.
Yes, I believe it is a law question.
On the second appeal to the Fifth Circuit, did the Fifth Circuit conclude that any of the district court findings on the three parts of the Graham test were clearly erroneous?
Yes. In fact, the Fifth Circuit found that there was really no evidence to support the findings of the district court. And that brings me to the question of the newly discovered evidence, which there are good procedural as well as substantive reasons, I think, for rejecting it. The first one is the jurisdictional question, which I have raised with respect to whether or not this is properly here. That is in my brief. That's a pure jurisdictional question. I admit I raised it for the first time here. I didn't think about it before, but it's jurisdictional, and the court, of course, is always interested in a jurisdictional question. The second one was that the documents which were introduced at the hearing on newly discovered evidence should have been rejected because those documents were deliberately withheld and not shown to me. There was a Rule 34 motion made to have the defendant disclose all of his documentary evidence which he may have on prior art. That would have covered Roe v. Whitmore and all the rest. That was not disclosed. Thirdly, with respect to the missionary and Mr. Meyer's testimony, Mr. Meyer and the missionary were admittedly the key to all the newly discovered evidence because Mr. Meyer was the one who knew about it all and who tied the whole thing together. There isn't any question that the defendant, as well as his attorney, knew about the missionary in October of 1969. At that time, he made a deliberate choice. I don't need the Mission Dairy to win this case, and therefore he didn't use the evidence. He went through a motion for summary judgment, didn't use it. 2 years later, he went through a trial, and he didn't use this evidence. After the Court of Appeals for the second time reversed and said the patent is invalid, he reached back and said, ah, but I have some newly discovered evidence, which I want the court to consider. The court very generously, I think, sent it back to the district court for a hearing under 60B2, and there simply said, oh, we're going to let all the evidence in, and never passed the threshold question, which Mr. Justice Stewart brought up, is this newly discovered evidence? Because there are very strict requirements under 60B2. The threshold questions were never satisfactorily answered. In fact, they were never answered, because under 60B2, you have to show, one, it's newly discovered, two, could not have been discovered by due diligence. In this case, there isn't any question they knew about it, and it didn't take due diligence to find out who the owner of the Mission Dairy one was once you knew about the Mission Dairy. All you had to do was to take a deposition. So, I think that under any test, whether it's even the Cuno test, that very controversial flash of genius test, which this court handed down.
Stamps?
I don't think it is, Mr. Chief Justice, but sometimes language from that decision creeps back in, and therefore I won't.
102 would have been the last sentence of it.
Was supposedly,
well, it was supposedly designed and deliberately enacted.
Yes,
I think that
legislation was enacted to dispense with it. I would say this on the philosophical, ideological. Gribble and Bennett are a classic case of the beneficial effect that the patent system should have. Now, here were two individuals who had nothing except some good ideas, hard work, and determination. Now, with the potential of a legally enforceable right, they went ahead and obtained a patent. Now, based on this belief, they started with a little business. They had nothing, and they succeeded in building up a reputable business which has received good commercial acceptance. Interestingly enough, this case has none of the odious features which some of the cases before this court involving patents may have had. They made the patent available to anybody practically for nothing. All that they asked was that you pay them a one-time fee of $1,500 plus $1 per cow. And that meant that anybody could get it. An installation of 300 cows costs $250,000, and the rent or the charge would be $1,800 once, and that's all. Thank you.